Michael Harris. Thank you for having me on. Wish everyone happy holidays. And the topic of my presentation is price action anomalies in golden bonds and the perils of backtesting. These are related. Okay. Usual disclaimer, you have seen many of those. These are my opinions, and there is no personal information in this presentation tailored to the investment needs of any specific person. Hypothetical or simulated results have the limitations, you know, and if you trade, you may lose all your money and you will be the only person responsible for that. No one else. Okay. So this is me. Exactly 2 years ago in New York City, I gave a presentation about the complexity and reflexivity in financial market forecasting at the M4 conference in New York City. I started trading 3 years ago with systematic trend following. I worked in robotics before and in the financial sector. I was in fixed income, and I developed also data mining programs for price action. I worked as a trader for hedge fund, and notably during the 2008 financial crisis, I managed to finish the year with almost flat. Okay, I have 2 master's degrees and I have written a few books. Okay, let's go. This is how I started trading. This is the Atari portfolio in 1919. I used that to program a systematic trading strategy, trend following. I used to input the prices manually into the small palm top, and it will give me the signals. And nowadays I use something more advanced, of course, but this still works. Okay, today. And this is how I started with a friend. I was working in fixed income. I was not a speculator, but my friend had an idea about a trading strategy for currency futures, and he convinced me to work and write the software, and we traded for 6 months. We put $200,000 in an account, and we made $120,000. And then I said to my friend, let's take the money and run as fast as we can. He said, no, this is a good system. I said, no, I take my cut and I go my way. And I took my money and I continue to trade small, because I'm a risk averse person. I trade small. I trade for small income. I don't take big risks. But my friend went ahead and raised $5 million for a fund. And after 2 years, I found out that he lost most of it. Because what I did, I simulated, I did a Monte Carlo simulation of the strategy. And I told him, look, we were just lucky. This is a random strategy. But he didn't believe me. Okay, this is a brief story. I use Norgate data from norgatedata.com. I'm not a reseller, but if you really need a very good data vendor with the listings for the US stock market, this is, I think, the best. And I use AmiBroker. I do my statistical analysis in R. I'm not an expert, so don't email me with R questions. I just do my own analysis with just what I know. Okay, before I go into the main presentation, year to date, as of yesterday close, GLD, the gold ETF, is up 23.1%. The SPY is up 16.4%, and the TLT, the bonds, 17.6%. And the dollar index is down -6.4%, down 6.4%. Despite the trillions of dollars in stimulus, gold outperforms stocks and bonds year to date. That made me very skeptical about what's happening in the markets. Okay, just to mention this. Okay, now, briefly, what is the problem of most traders based on my 30 years of experience? This is the problem. Let's consider the gold futures and consider 10,000 random traders. This is for this year, year to date. These random traders, they toss a fair coin before the close. And if they get heads, they go long, and if tails, they short, okay? So the initial capital is 100K. What you see is the histogram of the returns. The x-axis is the return, and the y-axis is the number of random traders that achieved that return. And as you see from the statistics, 48.70% of the traders had positive return. Of course, some lost up to 98.13%, and some lucky ones made up to 140.82%. But about half made money, with a buy and hold of 21.2%. 21.4% of the random traders made more than the buy and hold. Only 1.65% were stopped. So why 95% of traders lose, as the brokers say? The answer is they are undercapitalized. And you will see this in the next slide, where I reduce the initial capital to 20,000. And you see the distribution breaks down. Now, about 80% of traders, these random traders, but most traders are random anyway, are stopped or ruined. Why? Because they are undercapitalized with a margin of $11,000. They try to make money with capital of $20,000. Okay? So this is, in a nutshell, the problem of retail traders. They are undercapitalized. So let's go to the presentation. A brief introduction to price action anomalies, a few price action anomalies in golden bonds, and the perils of backtesting. Why backtesting? Why do I inject this here? Because it's important, in my view. Price action anomalies. Price action anomalies are patterns that contradict the efficient market hypothesis. In other words, those are patterns that can make money where the efficient market hypothesis says that you cannot make money analyzing prices. Okay, that's why they are called anomalies. Of course, the efficient market hypothesis is a joke. Everybody knows that. Seasonality and calendar effects. Price action formations like candlesticks, indicator patterns, RSI, MACD, moving average cross, rule-based strategies in general. If any of these works, is an anomaly because it's not supposed to work according to economic theory. The risk is that a good anomaly can suddenly stop to provide profits. And there is a long list of those. Example, the fast trend following anomaly of the 70s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. You buy if price crosses above the 20-day moving average, and you short if price crosses below the 60-day moving average, the 20-day moving average. Of course, you couldn't do it with the index, okay? But there were other ways with the so-called tracking portfolios. This had annualized return of more than 9%, with a small, relatively, drawdown of less than 25%. It worked really well. So a lot of people realize that. And look what happened after 1980. 82% drawdown. This was an anomaly. A lot of people made a lot of money with fast trend following, and then it stopped working. Okay? So this is an example of what can happen. Okay, chart patterns like head and shoulders, pennants, flags. There was an early attempt by analysts, technical analysts, to map prices to some representation of prices for reducing forecasting complexity. And this is called a lossy compression method because information is lost. The main problem, those patterns were not backtested and the actual profitability was not known. If you open the books of technical analysis, they tell you if this and that happens, you know, this pattern, head and shoulders, inverse, they don't tell you what is your expectation, how much money you are expected to make on the average. It's all subjective. So they were not backtested. When people started backtesting, they realized that these are random patterns. The method for identifying price action anomalies, visual inspection of charts. It's the old way, but it's still popular. Data mining, it's popular nowadays. Machine learning, you know, and even in real time. And unique hypothesis hypothesis. This is the hard way. This is how macro funds work. They say if interest rates rise and the dollar falls and GDP grows, this will happen in the bond market, okay? And then they test that. And the quant traders, they backtest those anomalies to evaluate their performance and statistical significance. Look, if you say you have a method to trade and you cannot estimate the longer term expectation, and expectation is synonymous to the longer term average trade, it's the same thing mathematically, but expectation is something different. It's the mean of the distribution of the population, which is achieved at the sufficient samples. But this is, we cannot go into this now. If you have a method that you don't know the longer term expectation, you are trading randomly, except if you have a sufficiently long performance record, actual, okay? In that case, you can assume that the expectation in the future will be the average trade you have, but something can happen and this can change because the markets are what is called non-stationary. They change all the time. We will see that shortly. So, examples, because I'm a practical person, you know, a trader, you know, we're not going to talk about math here much. Everyone knows the overnight anomaly in SPY. It's well known. All gains in SPY since inception are due to overnight changes. Nothing was contributed from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. It's amazing. You see, the red line is the accumulation of overnight changes. The green line is the accumulation of daily changes, regular trading hours. It's negative. It's been negative for a long time. This is an amazing anomaly. This refutes the efficient market hypothesis right here. A less known anomaly is that all gains in gold ETF, GLD, have been due to overnight changes. As you see here, the red line. Regular trading hours have contributed negative return to GLD. So what does this mean? If you have a trading method like swing position, you can take advantage of this by avoiding, when you exit the positions, the regular trading hours. It's better to exit at the open and enter at the close, okay? You don't have to do it every day. Let's say that your average holding period is like 6 days, but still the gains accumulate for SPY and GLD, and there are many others, you know, who cannot go into. Okay, problem. Many known anomalies like that are not profitable due to transaction costs and slippage. Like in the GLD ETF, if you buy at the close and sell at the open with just a cent per share commission, you do worse than buy and hold. Okay, so the idea here is to find anomalies that have a small sample, but not too small. Small, but significant. Okay, and these are usually seasonality anomalies. Okay, seasonality anomaly in GLD ETF. Bulk of the gains in GLD ETFs since inception have been realized on Fridays. Some people know that. The first chart here is Monday, 1 basis point minus. The second day is Tuesday, 1 basis point. Wednesday is 5 basis points. Thursday, those are returns, okay? The average return. Thursday is 2 basis points, but Friday is 13 basis points. So this is significant. So let's backtest that. If we backtest buy at close of the day, if the next day is Friday, and sell at the close of Friday with commission of 1 cent, we have 812 trades and win rate 56.5%. And we capture 62% of the annualized return at a much lower drawdown, maximum drawdown, only 18% versus like 46%. Now, this is amazing, but the problem is the anomaly here may suddenly disappear, okay? For now, it seems it's working. Let's look at another one. Some people, especially old timers, they know this gold seasonality. Buy the open after December 15 and exit the open after February 15. Let me check something here. My screen. Okay. This one has 17 trades because there are so many years since GLD inception. Win rate is 70.6%. Also here, more than 60% of the annualized return, the CAR, has been captured by this symbol anomaly. And you see here, gold was going down and the equity curve was going up. Yeah, that's amazing, you know. Now, let's use the gold spot, the London PM fix, to go back further, okay, to see how this has done since the abolishment of the gold standard, okay, in the early 70s. This anomaly worked well with 278 return up to 1980. Then there was a drop in the equity, minus 32%. But since 1998, it's working 168%. Buy open after December 13, exit open after February 15. Okay, this is for educational purposes. If you trade it and you lose money, you are the one who is responsible, as per disclaimer in the beginning of the presentation. Now, the win rate is 60% and we have 52 trades here for the longer period using the spot. Let's look at the seasonality in TLT. Again, day seasonality. The bulk of the gains in TLT have been realized on Fridays and Mondays. Okay, you see here nine basis points and 4 basis points for Monday. The average gain. The other days are 2 basis points and 3. So let's test this. This is very good, actually. This is more than 72% of the annualized return. And look what happened this year. There was a spike of about 40% gain in this anomalous price action, but then there is a reversion to the mean, which is normal, okay? So you can trade this both ways. If you see a spike, expect then reversion to the mean. And let's see this on bond futures, the T-bond, okay? The red line is the actual regression line. And you see this is working well, and there is a reversion to the mean after a very large gain this year. And this is, I believe, I did this with 30,000K capital per one contract, okay? If I remember correctly. So this is another, anomaly that... this one is in bonds. You know, I have developed this indicator. I call it the Mommergen indicator, from momentum and mean reversion. The Mommergen indicator measures the relative strength of momentum in daily returns. The code is available for free in my site. Here is the link. Maybe David wants to put the link so people can access, they can find the code. I use this to gauge how difficult it is to trade a market. You see, in gold, there are these wild swings from momentum to mean reversion, okay? So this is a difficult market to trade. You know, some people try a momentum method and then suddenly the market becomes mean reverting and they lose their money. Like in the first presentation yesterday, gold, thank you, David, gold is either for catastrophe hedge, you buy it and then you pass it to your children, but you don't speculate. Because if you start speculating with gold, there is no method, there is no system that works well because of the continuous shift from momentum to mean reversion. You see, in the market, there are two major modes, momentum and mean reversion. Those are the only two. And the market changes constantly from momentum to mean reversion and back and forth in order to damage most participants. Okay? So this is how, I decide how difficult is a market. It's not so simple, but, I provide the code for anyone who wants to try to see. Now, this is bond futures. Wild swings. I knew this hedge fund manager. Fischer in 2011, he went short bonds and his fund was liquidated. I mean, this is terrible. You know, when you have a fund, hedge fund, and it is liquidated by the brokers, this is the worst thing that can happen to the career of a person, of a trader. Why? Because you can see here, in 2011, it was mini reverting and he short, but then suddenly became a momentum market and bonds went higher. And if he used my indicator, he would have seen this because he touched, you know, this line at 40. You know, terrible for him. Now, let's talk about methods for identifying price action anomalies, because this is what is important. Usually, you want to identify some anomalies very few people have already, and then you can take maximum advantage. If you can identify an anomaly, in a somewhat liquid market, okay, because you can find many anomalies in OTC stocks and some non-liquid commodities, but where you go in the market makers, we're gonna take you to the cleaners, okay? So if you find an anomaly in a market, maybe it's a ticket to accumulate significant wealth. So many people try the visual inspection, others try data mining, others try the unique hypothesis, like we said before. But in all cases, you have to know the performance. You have to backtest. You cannot go or say to yourself or to other people, if you do this and that, you may make money. Anyone can say this. Even the trader who tosses a coin. If you toss a coin, you can make money. So what is the backtesting process? You start right here, strategy generation. Either visually, or you are a mathematician, statistician, trader, experience, like many people, you know, I listened in this presentation, in this meeting. And then you backtest and you optimize it. All strategies are optimized one way or the other. What is bad is the over-optimization. And then you say, do I accept this from my in-sample? Yes. You backtest on some out-of-sample or forward in real time, in actual trading. And then if the data comes good, you select it and you continue, maybe you increase risk. But if you do not accept the in-sample or you do not accept the forward sample, then you go back to strategy generation again. And this is really problematic because this introduces data snooping. You start reusing the data. You start looking at the same charts all over again. If you look at a chart many, many times, you may see unimaginable things after some time. So this is the most problematic step is the data snooping. And I have this in my book, Full Buy Technical Analysis, The Perils of Charting, Backtesting, and Data Mining. The sources of bias in everything you do with the markets, not only with backtesting, but you know, I'm talking about backtesting here. But even when you analyze visually, is overfitting by optimizing parameters. You say, oh yes, the 100-day moving average seems to work better. This is optimization. And then you select the best performing strategies. Why is this a problem? Because when you select the best performing, you ignore all those other hundreds, even thousands of strategies that do not work. And the data snooping due to reusing data or looking at the same charts over and over and over again. So this is how it goes. In the first step, you do backtesting or you analyze charts. Your probability of finding something good is alpha. And then as you progress and you backtest, analyze charts, and you go many times, it becomes alpha divided by n. And then this goes to zero. So if you do the same thing all over again, again and again, at the end, what you find is something random. So how do you solve this problem? Backtesting process, wrong application. Backtesting can only be used to reject strategies, but never accept them. You say, I backtested the strategy and it didn't work in the past, so it may not work in the future. Of course, there is a margin of error here. It's called type 2 error. False rejection, but it's small. Backtesting cannot be used for point forecasts. in most cases. The same applies to chart analysis. You cannot use chart analysis to say where the market is going to be 6 months from now, because there are infinite paths, theoretically, the market can follow. Unless you have a highly statistical, highly significant method statistically. And the higher the backtesting frequency, the higher the bias. So the proper application is backtest when there is a sound idea, and if possible, unique. You scratch your head and you say, oh, I thought of this idea. When bonds go down and the dollar goes up and VIX stays flat, I'm just making up something, then stocks will go up, for example. And then you backtest this. And if it doesn't work, you forget it. You don't try to fix it. And you avoid strategies suggested by the data, like in machine learning or in naive chart analysis, unless solid validation is applied. You have to apply some, you know, solid method to analyze the strategies you deduce from the data. You have to remove what is called bias of a strategy suggested by the data, because it may be noise, because it may be suggested by noise, okay? So here is the result. Type 1 error is a false acceptance, false positive. Type 2 error is false rejection, false negative. Backtest results, you get positive. If the actual results are positive, this happens only 2.5% of the time, you know, roughly. If backtest results are positive and the actual results are negative, this happens 95% of the time, along with negative backtest results and negative actual results. So plus plus is the type 1 error. Minus backtest results and plus actual results is also 2.5% of the time. So backtesting is useless 95% of the time. This is terrible. And some people say, oh yes, okay, I go back to look at charts. Yes, this is worse. This is 99.99% useless because of subjectivity. So proper application, backtest when there is a good idea and avoid strategies suggested by data. I have developed a program, it's called DLPAL-S, to find price action anomalies in open, high, low, close data, and it generates code for various platforms. This is for very short-term trading, and you see here running for GLD ETF in this case, and you know, here is the output. For instance, here I found 10 long and 1 short strategy, but these have to be validated with forward testing, robustness, portfolio testing, and the sample size is important. Low sample size is problematic, and you have to use many of these anomalies in several markets to reduce your variance. For instance, this is the equity curve of this system, but this system may stop working suddenly. There is no guarantee, okay? So this is the quant way of doing it. Other people do it by looking at charts. Some people have a lot of experience looking at charts because they traded many years. They can be better than quants because they have the experience and they can trade off charts with high profitability. Most people that trade off charts lose money. Most people that try the quant method lose money. At the end of the day, it boils down to how you do your homework. And it's important because the markets are becoming very, very competitive with algo trading, machine learning. Like many people, the old timers remember the 90s, before even the Berlin Wall went down. And I have many articles, free articles in my website, if you follow the link, why something changed after 2000 and how changed. All these bright young people from the East Soviet Union, for example, they joined the free market and they start trading, and then the Chinese, and now the competition is very, very elevated. There is too much competition in the markets, and to stay ahead, you have to do a lot of homework. You have to be well capitalized, like I said in the beginning, and it doesn't matter what your method is, if you are trading charts or if you are a quant, still you have to do your homework, and this is demanding, and you usually it's a, you know, all day job to stay ahead of the crowd and not redistribute your wealth to the market. And with that, you know, this is for more information, please go to my website. I have a free book, Profitability and Systematic Trading. It was published by Willy in 2008. Now the rights belong to me and I give it to traders for free. I don't charge for it. You can download it. It's introductory book, but you can still find some interesting things, I believe, in that book. And there are many links to articles related to this presentation. I try to make it 45 minutes. So if you have any questions, and then, you know, to have a small break for people, you know, have a soda or coffee or something until the next presentation. I got to thank the organizers for the invitation. Yesterday I watched all the presentations. They were very interesting. Today I was busy in the morning and I couldn't. And I wish everybody happy holidays and good health and a prosperous 2001. Thank you very much for your attention.